Welcome to Design Oracles. We are here to pontificate, evangelize, and educate you on residential interior design and architecture.
I'm Amity Worrell, interior designer of Amity Worrell and Company.
And I'm Diane Kett, architect of DK Studio.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Amity.
So for this season, Diane and I have decided to talk about our own experiences since our overarching theme is the value of experience. Mm-hmm. So this will ideally give everybody an idea of what our personal experiences are that brought us to this point.
Yeah.
So let's see. I am from Austin, born and raised in Austin, Texas. And I grew up in a very large family. I'm the last of nine, actually. My mother was, I didn't realize this till later, but my mother was really a natural, I was trying to think of the word to put it, a comfort maker. She didn't necessarily make you comfortable with food. She was a terrible cook. She didn't make you comfortable in some other ways. But as far as the space that we were in, it was always so much more comfortable than other people's houses. This is just me looking back. She had a natural ability to arrange furniture, which she did often and changed often.
So she'd rearrange the rooms.
She would rearrange the rooms. She was a big garage sale, yard sale person, and she would also find different furniture sets in the newspaper. Remember those days?
Yes.
And buy them. She bought a French Provincial set for our dining room or formal dining, formal living, right out of a realtor's office lobby or something. We went with her for that. And I feel as though in my childhood we were always hauling furniture.
Funny.
And she had real estate. Her and my father had real estate, rental properties. And so we were either hauling it to the rental property or hauling it to our house or buying it or exchanging it or trading it or having a yard sale. So, and a lot of it was furniture. So I got a lot of experiences of watching her kind of put spaces together. And that wasn't her background at all. She just was interested in it. And she was really interested in people. She thinks or thought, she's passed away now, that people were the most interesting thing in the world. And she was always fascinated by them. And I got that from her. And so she actually told fortunes in our house. She was a gypsy. She called them gypsy witch cards. And she would tell gypsy witch. She would read tarot cards, essentially, and crystal balls. And I think a lot of that for her, at least, was about her intuition with people and spending time with them and getting to hear their stories and engaging with them. She loved it. And that's how I came into this field, was just a love of an interest in people and how they live. And then with that background in kind of furniture and interest in making spaces, I guess I'd say. And then from a really early age, I had also an art appreciation. I had my mother, a real appreciation for art. And I had a natural ability to identify different periods of art. I remember going on a field trip with the school and they would ask us questions about the art. And I was probably 7 or 8. And I could identify periods of art based on what my mother had taught me at home. I could look at a painting and know that it was painted in the 30s or in the 40s, or because I had an interest in history. And so all of these things just kind of started coming together for me, that I was into art appreciation, into history, into periods of history, into people. And then in the 70s, there were a lot of really strong arts programs in the country that don't exist anymore, but
yeah,
they were here. That was a really big time for arts programs. And there was one in Austin called Backstage with the Arts.
Oh, cool.
These old hippies ran it. Actually, they weren't that old. These
Where
young
was it
hippies.
In Austin?
It was, they went all over Austin. We met in different venues. I remember we met at Zachary Scott Theater and we met at the Armadillo and watched a ballet. And then we got to meet the ballet dancers afterward. We went to watch some dancers at the University of Texas and meet them afterward. Went to some plays and so there was just a real hefty arts program that I got somehow to be a part of, which was amazing. And so then I went off to high school and college, and there I really discovered an interest in theater. And
where'd you go to college?
University of Texas.
Okay, so you stayed in Austin.
Yeah, 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 mm-hmm. yeah. And I didn't major in theater, but I did theater on the side. But what I really loved about that, and I did some of this in high school, was the directing.
Yeah, I love that too.
I like bossing people around. I like being orchestrated. too. I like orchestrating scenes. I like, you know, just that kind of movement of large groups of people from place to place. My dad was a colonel in the Air Force, and he was the base commander at Bergstrom Air Force Base, and he was a hospital director at one point. And I think I got that from him. He ran, like, he managed large groups of people. He was the hospital director at a hospital in South Texas, and he had an entire base that he was in charge of.
Right,
and
he probably had a big desk.
I think he probably had a big desk. Probably had a big desk. So. So anyway, I did the theater thing. So that was arts related. And also I learned that I liked directing and still had an interest in people. And I went to UT and majored in Shakespeare, or majored in English, and studied Shakespeare and Milton. And I was really into my art history classes. And I did a couple of organized some gallery shows for friends who were painters. Cause again, I liked organizing people and creating spaces. I went to every single office hour for my poor, probably tortured teaching assistant for my art history class. He had them once a week.
You would just go to
I went every single one.
To do what?
Just to talk about art history. I just loved it. So then it was time for me to find a job, but I had no skill. No marketable skill. And I got to be friends with a TA of mine in an English class who had a friend who worked at Christie's Auction House in New York. And I was interested in the art world, and I had applied to graduate school in art history and not gotten into a single program. Mm-hmm. So I got an opportunity to come to New York City, to go to New York City and interview for an internship in the Old World Masters Department. And I didn't get it. And then I didn't get the next one because I didn't have the front desk look at the Christie's front desk, sit at the front desk and welcome people when they came in. So I ended up going to 3 or 4 different internship interviews and landed an internship in the jewelry department.
Oh, okay. That's fun.
And it was really fun. It was really fun. And early on, they discovered that I was really bad at paperwork. I'm terrible at it. I hate spreadsheets. But I was really good at the people part of it. So I ended up meeting with clients, even as an intern, because they were so busy. So I would be allowed to go talk to the clients, talk to them about their jewelry, bring the pieces upstairs to show to the specialists, and kind of be a liaison with the public. I also I rode on their tour bus that went, it was not a tour bus, but it was a little bus that they used to curry potential auction buyers from one auction site where they had galleries to another auction site where they had galleries before each show, before each sale. And I needed the extra money because I think I was making, by that time, $21,000 a year.
I made more than you.
And I was in New York City.
You were in New York.
I had no skill. And I needed the extra money. So I worked weekends. Just, you know, Diane was talking when she talked about her story about working long hours. I, too, would work long hours. I would stay till 2 in the morning if there was a sale going on. And I always got there at 7 and, you know, left at 7 or 8. And that was kind of expected in my generation and in the field that I was in, but wasn't necessarily healthy. But what I did learn there was how to work, got some job skills, kept up my interest in people and hearing their stories and listening to them. And I learned that I loved design. Jewelry design is where it started. But I really, really got involved and interested in the antique jewelry. And I also got to learn about furniture. And I also learned about people's emotional connection to their belongings, to their things.
Oh, yeah, I bet. Mm-hmm. People bringing them in and then they tell you their story of how they've had that piece. Yeah.
And they would cry and say, this is what my you know, was there, this watch belonged to my grandfather, or this ring belonged to my grandmother, or people just were really connected to their art and their furniture and their rugs and their jewelry, and especially jewelry because you wear it on your body. So mm-hmm. I think that people get really emotionally connected to their things. And I loved being surrounded by the beauty of it, but I didn't love the business part of it. At the auction house in those days there at Sotheby's, there was a department that was in charge of reading the death notices every morning to see who had died.
Okay.
And that was back when we had newspapers, and you would get the newspaper and look and see who died, and then you would contact the attorney of that person that died to try to get their estate.
All right.
So because that business really runs on the three Ds, death, divorce, and disenfranchisement. Mm-hmm. So that's what they called it. And so it was a little bit depressing because people were sometimes selling things they didn't want to sell, but they had things. So this is depressing to talk about a little bit, but it was a realization for me that it was like those garage sales that I had gone to as a kid that were fun and exciting, but on a grander scale, and sometimes because of bad things that had happened to people's lives. And there was good and there was bad, and I learned a lot, but I did decide that it wasn't the business for me. So I got the newspaper, the New York Times, and started looking for a job in publishing because I had an English degree, and that did not pay much, probably less than the auction world. And so I ended up finding a position as an office manager at an architecture and interior design firm, which sounded artsy to me and was off Park Avenue, very beautiful townhouse, very high-end residential interiors. The husband was the architect, the wife was the interior designer. There were four people in the whole firm total. And it was very, very civilized. No more working till 2 in the morning. No more working weekends. Not much more money, but much more happiness. I'm a terrible office manager, though.
That's just like kind of like the paperwork.
But I really fit in really well with my team, with the boss, and she took me under her wing, would take me to job sites, and I would see installations. And she very quickly figured out that I was very good at telling people what to do. So she very quickly put me in charge of when we would go to installation, sort of managing the rug installer or the carpet installer, making sure if she told me what needed to be managed, I could manage it. I'm really good at dealing with people, and I loved that part of it. So I ended up doing that, and I got to go to a few parties and events at the D&D building in New York, and it was so exciting. Everyone dressed really well, and it was really beautiful, and it was very happy. And it was about creating spaces versus selling stuff, although it is about selling stuff too, but different than Christie's. And I fell in love with the business, and I just said, okay, this is the business I want to be in. So I went back to school while I worked for that firm. And I got into New York School of Interior Design, and I started going after work in the evenings. And this is at a time when the business was really on fire. Interiors was really on fire. And one day, I was the office manager of this firm, and the phone rang, and I answered it, and it was a headhunter. And he never met me. He'd never seen my work. He just chatted me up and asked me if I would like to move on to a better job and be an interior designer. And this is back in the days before cell phones. So I said yes, and I went to a payphone and called him, kind of like he was a drug dealer. And we had this conversation, and I guess I schmoozed him enough that he was sent me off to this really important interior design firm. Bill Huber and Associates is what they go by now. And I went, he said, do you have a portfolio? And I said, of course I have a portfolio. I did not have a portfolio. I was still a student, but I had enough classes under my belt that I could put something together. So I put together a portfolio of my, in quotes, work. And they knew I was a student in school, New York School of Interior Design. And I went on the interview and I got the job. And it was a really big deal. It was a really big deal firm. And we had clients like David Bowie, and Anna Wintour was one of our clients at the time, and Peter Jennings, and Bob Pittman, if anybody knows who he is. And it was a very exciting firm to be part of, and really grueling, back to long days, long hours, really demanding, difficult for me to do school at the same time. I took some classes at Parsons for a while, but it was really difficult because I was really thrown in. And as Diane was saying, when she shared her story, it was sink or swim. They just kind of throw you in. And my first day out, I was hired to be an assistant, but they immediately made me a project manager. And out of the gate, that's what I was doing. And so I really learned in the field. I learned in school, but I learned most of what I learned in the field. A lot of getting yelled at, a lot of mistakes getting made. But then.
So you were working again, 12-hour days.
I was working long days again. I was having the time of my life. I was meeting really exciting people. I was getting to go to beautiful residences. And then Jeffrey, Bill Huber, the owner of that firm, was an incredible teacher. And so he taught me about how he liked to teach. He actually taught for a while at Parsons, but, and he's a speaker. He does a lot of speaking engagements. He's written a number of books, but he would take all of us once we worked for him into the field and teach us how things were made. He really thought it was important to educate us. So I got a great education working there. And let's see. So from there, but it was long hours, really long hours.
And were you getting paid overtime or were you just?
No, overtime, just salary. No, there's a lot of that. I don't know if that still happens today. I imagine it probably.
I don't think it does.
No?
No, there's a lot of overtime pay now.
And now I would have just begged.
At least the architecture profession has definitely had a shift and I think that's for the better.
I don't know. I mean, I would have done anything that they asked me to do. It was not healthy, but I was so happy to be there and learned so much. It was incredible, but it was hard to keep up that kind of pace, even at a young age. So I left there and I went to work for Tom Shearer, which is another kind of important and well-published New York architecture firm. And there I had nicer clients, still very discerning, very very high-end, you know, people with private islands that were in the Exumas. And we would go there and we would fly in and land on water and then stay on the island and decorate or go to Aspen or go to the Grand Tetons and set up for Christmas and just – and it was lovely. Tom was really, really great to work for, very nice. Wasn't as into teaching as Jeffrey was, but a really generous person, very kind. It was a great experience. And there I got to do as much as I wanted to do because Tom liked to spend a lot of time in the Bahamas and with friends and travel. So it was just me for a long time. And eventually there ended up being six or seven of us. But because I was his first employee ever, I had an assistant. I got to do some really exciting projects in Maine. I got to do a lot of really fun stuff. So I loved that profession combined my interest in like directing large groups of people and being surrounded by beauty and then that emotional connection to spaces and being around art and discerning different styles. Plus it brought in my love of history and furniture. And so something I can constantly be educating myself on, which I do still do this podcast. I do blogs. I write for magazines or articles if they ask me to. And I try to constantly keep learning what's going on in the field. So New York School of Interior Design and Parsons, where I met a lot of interesting people. I think probably interior history was my favorite. And, you know, at that school, because you're in New York City, the person teaching is the curator at the Met. And
yeah, that's true.
It's just a really neat place.
Yeah.
Lucky to be there. And I got to meet, you know, interesting, crazy people too in the field. Like an ex ballet dancer was our wallpaper hanger, and she was a little crazy. No offense. You know, another person who was my drawing teacher, she had been a ballet dancer, and then she became a houseware designer, and now she does fashion. And so it was just a really neat time to be like young and in the city and learning all these things and meeting all these people. And but I also learned how the business runs, how custom furniture is made, how to manage clients and how to manage timelines and how to manage emotions. And that's probably the best learning I got when I was there. And also, and this is something that Diane shares a real interest in, and I think we'll probably end up talking more about housekeeping, about homes, how to keep homes clean. And I didn't grow up with domestic help in my life. So it was really interesting to see how the other half lives and see that world. Really, really interesting. And at that second firm, I had a lot, big budgets and a lot of trust from the client. So when things went wrong at that firm, wrong in quotes, we just kind of told our clients that they needed to settle down and roll with the punches. You know, we had a lot of kind of power in that relationship. And it was at a point where it was because the clients were just really nice, reasonable people, and they were not demanding in the way that people think those types of clients might be. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's what happens when you have four houses and you're not as concerned, or they're just a little bit more relaxed about it. But that was really, really great.
Or maybe because they'd done it so many times.
Maybe. Yeah. But yeah, that's where I really became a professional. I had an assistant and learned all of the ins and outs of, got a bigger picture of how it rolls. So then I went out on my own in 2008, after I had my son, and working at the firm became much more difficult with the demands of travel, et cetera.
Yeah, with having a little one.
Yeah. So I started working for myself. And then I had another baby shortly thereafter, 20 months apart, and we made the decision to come home to Texas, come back to Texas. And so while my kids were young, I worked for about 3 years. I worked very little. I kind of just dabbled in it, but I always kept my hand in it. Mm-hmm. I probably would have continued working if it hadn't been for the move, but would have been easier, but I had to start over from scratch.
Yeah, right. And then in the town where you hadn't been for a while.
In the town where I hadn't been. And when I was here, I was a theater person. It was a very different thing. So, but I founded my current company in 2012. So it'll be 10 years in April. And now I focus mostly on additions and renovations, a little bit on new builds, but and a lot on decorating, actually. You know, the soft goods of furniture and the wallpaper and the mm-hmm. fabrics and the window treatments. And I really like to work in period homes. And Diane and I share that, too, is a love of historic homes and older homes, but also character homes, homes with character
is what I would call that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So, yeah, I love what I do. And I love it more and more all the time, because the greater my expertise becomes, the more interest. I never run out of things to learn from it. I never run out of interest in, you know, like a side topic related to it, whether it's lighting or housekeeping or the psychology of design or clean air or, you know, whatever mm-hmm. those kind of interesting side pieces are. It never gets old for me. And then I think it all comes back to really just making a home comfortable, making spaces comfortable, and that connection to people. That's what keeps it fresh, because no matter how many times you do the same style of house or you've done something, a banquet 500 times, you're always doing it for a different person, and there's always different personalities to take in. And then I love working with architects and other tradespeople and learning their styles and kind of bringing that together. And it just, to me, it just gets more and more interesting all the time.
Yeah, I always love how excited you get about everything.
Yeah.
It's always really fun working with you. And I think your clients see that too, which is really nice.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
So it sounds like your career path was a bit, I mean, you did work long hours, but it seemed to be nicer environments.
Yeah. Well, there was plenty of yelling, but it's true that you seem to know what you wanted to do from mm-hmm. an early mm-hmm. age, and I did not. I came to it much later, I think. I had to try out other things first. So I always find it amazing that people like you just kind of know what they want to do and they get to that quickly. I never did that.
Although that first job I took, I remember researching changing careers because it was so awful and mm-hmm. grueling, and mm-hmm. the treatment of the principals treating their lower staff was
I remember being kicked out of a cab once by Jeffrey, so I wasn't always treated well, or waiting in a lobby. I was 10 minutes late, and he was waiting for me in the lobby of a building. We were supposed to go up and see a client, and he was so angry he left. Thanks, Jeffrey. You're probably not listening to this, but if you do. And so I had to face the client alone and explain why I was there without Jeffrey. And then when I got back to the office, I got a stern talking to that I won't, will never forget. That will not happen again. And it didn't. But it's so interesting that things are different these days. I don't think you're allowed to talk to people that way.
I don't think so.
They talk to us.
I don't know. I definitely wanted to create an environment that was not like that. I used to keep a running list of all the stuff I was going to do when I owned my own farm that I kept in my desk drawer.
So it's very interesting that you say that, because I agree. I also kind of thought, these are the things that work. Like when I worked for Tom, a lot of it worked. It was really great. It was very civilized, how much time we worked and weren't expected to do overtime. And that was new at the time. I stayed there 6 years for that reason. And that's the kind of thing I wanted to make sure that my firm was like, where I didn't overwork people. And neither of us do that now. So,
yeah, I would say the firm I worked for in Austin was not as intense about that. Like the place I worked in Dallas, and I felt like it was just the way Austin was, just the vibe of the city. It's changed a little bit now, the vibe of Austin, but it definitely was such a much calmer, and I felt like that transpired through into the firms. Although, there, I mean, we definitely had some late nights where we were working hard on projects to get done and deadlines and design, but it was not near as intense as it was in Dallas.
Yeah, I can imagine Dallas.
And in Dallas at that time, I mean, now they have Trinity developed and there's a lot of other great places. I've been back and I can't believe what that city looks like. But at the time, it was just parking lots. The only place you could go was White Rock Lake. And when you went, there was just 1,001 people there. And, you know, there was just no nature that you could access. It was just, and I mean, the shopping was great, but I made $24,000.
What were you going to buy?
All I got to do was look at it and see how I couldn't. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I can tell you that making $21,000 a year and working at Christie's,
oh my gosh,
everybody else was wearing Armani for some reason. It's very confusing for me.
Were you able to get ramen noodles?
Yeah, I had cold sesame noodles from the corner, Chinese store on the corner, more often than I care to admit. But it was a wonderful experience, a wonderful place to go and learn.
I think it does sound like a great experience.
It was.
That then was kind of the diving board for you to then get into the interior design.
I like to say to people, I went to New York City and came back with a career, because I didn't really have one leading up to that. So,
All right. Thanks, Amity.
Thank you.
That was really fun
and
colorful.
For listening. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to Design Oracles with Amity Worrell, owner of Amity Worrell & Company, and Diane Kett, owner of DK Studio.